Welcome to the Who's He podcast with me, Phil.
And me, Paul.
And on this episode, we're going to be talking about Phantasmagoria, a very old Big Finish story. It's actually release number 2, which is on the 4th of October 1999. Christ's sake. How old were you then in October 1999, Paul? Or 29, were you?
29.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And yes, I'm 53 now, so Jesus Christ. What have we done with our lives, Paul?
Listen to Big Finish.
Oh, dear. Well, really, folks, we're going to sort of get straight into it this episode because there is really is no news to talk about. There's been the odd sort of bit of advertising coming out of the BBC and Disney Plus and everything that we've had. I think the most recent thing has been the recent cover for the Doctor Who magazine, which we're not going to really talk about. Everyone's seen, you know, the Beatles cover. But it's just a little bit of RTD. I think he was on BBC Breakfast News, I think, during the week. That's about it. So it's sort of ramping up slowly, isn't it? I'm not giving anything away, which is good, actually. So I'm looking forward to it. I think the only thing we haven't yet decided on is just exactly when we're going to get together and review this new series. We can sort of take our time with it, really, can't we? We'll do it as quickly as we like. Yeah. But, yeah, we haven't actually quite figured out what we're doing yet. And also the fact that I'm going on holiday mid-run as well. So we'll figure it out as we get nearer the time, I'm sure. But I don't think people are going to be sort of, you know, looking to us first for the reviews. Let's be perfectly honest here.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, what else? How else are they going to make up their mind whether they like it or not?
No, there's plenty of others out there. I dare say, because it's going out on iPlayer at midnight our time in the UK, I dare say there's going to be plenty of people, as soon as they've watched it, it's going to be out there immediately. So I would expect we'll probably be one of the last podcasts to get our review out there. So, except maybe for that week we're on holiday, because we might have to do something a bit quicker that week. The following week's not so bad, but it's just that that week before we go, before I go on holiday, it's going to be, well, that weekend. Yeah. We've got to figure out what we're going to do there. But you'll be, listeners, you'll be the second people to know about what yes, so. Okay then, so should we get cracking with Phantasmagoria then?
Yes.
Oh, before we do, let's listen to a little clip.
William, as in William and Mary, right?
So they did teach you something at Brendan then?
I liked history.
Well, now you can watch it happen. It's the 8th of March, 1702.
My name is Nicholas Valentine.
I prithee pardon, gentlemen, but I must make free with your purses. Till next we meet. Good night, gentlemen. It has been a pleasure. Ha! A pleasure for you to be robbed by Major Billy Lovemore!
If we had time, you and I could sit by the fire and natter on about mapping exterior continuums onto interior dimensions and so on and so forth.
But we don't have time.
Regrettably, no. However, for the sake of established history, that's probably no bad thing.
There have been developments. Our client reports there is something odd going on in the vicinity. Disappearances. Then last night, something more.
In the name of Christ, help me!
Who is it? What ails you?
And also, what? They're coming! They're coming for me!
We shall play another game, you and I. I'm afraid the rules are of my own making.
Okay, so we've sort of tossed a coin, and I'm going to go first, aren't I?
Yes,
because we couldn't remember who went first last time. But okay, then. So, when this sort of first started, because it's a four-part story, this one. goes on for an hour and a half. Listened to it. I wasn't quite sure what to make of it. But the more it went on, the more I got into it, and I really ended up enjoying this one.
Right.
Actually, I really did enjoy it. I thought it was a really good story. I couldn't quite figure out where it was heading to begin with. But once it got cracking and all the different characters came in, I really enjoyed it, actually. What about you, Paul?
I thought it was okay. I would have liked a bit more fleshing out of the different characters, I think.
In what way? Or what characters, I should say, really? What characters you thought needed fleshing out a bit more?
Well, I think the... Obviously, because this is so recent, we have to say about spoilers. the Hannah character,
Hannah Fry character,
but the actual alien, the alien behind that, I think probably, he'd been a murderer on her planet and had killed her parents, but you never quite, there was never quite the. The feeling of there's quite a disconnect between her story and this, I felt.
I kind of see what you mean, because I mean her character's sort of really sort of quite sort of central to everything that's going on, because she's not who she says she is, and she's another character who's not who he says he is either. So
I did like that twist. That was quite good. The whole thing on that, when it suddenly went, oh, okay, you suddenly had to go, okay,
yeah,
because right,
that was the cliffhanger from episode 3, wasn't it? When you sort of like, oh, well, that really caught me by surprise, to be honest. We're trying not to spoil it too much for you. Listeners, but it caught me by surprise, that reveal, which I actually thought was a bit of a stroke of genius, actually.
Yes, definitely different.
Yeah, certainly.
It's just you never quite got the whole communicating backwards, presumably to the home world or to whoever had not sent her, because he says they volunteered. But, you know, that just sort of... Well, going on that, and he was trying to work out exactly what was going on there, wasn't massively explained. Or didn't have a real feel on that.
Yeah, I suppose it's quite a simple reason for wanting to get after or kill Sir Nicholas Valentine.
Yeah.
Who's the bad guy of the piece here? He killed my parents. It's a very, very hoary old reason, isn't it, to be honest? There's nothing original there at all with that. And I don't know, I suppose you don't really need any more than that, really.
I suppose not.
You know, it's a very, very Doctor Who-ish thing to have, isn't it? It's revenge. That's it, really. That's the sole motivation for Hannah Fry.
Yeah.
It's revenge. And that's it. And I suppose, really... I mean, Mark Gatiss wrote this as well as sort of, you know, starring in this as well. I suppose he felt there wasn't any other reason to give her any more sort of background. I suppose he thought that was reason enough.
No.
You know, but...
Yeah. There just was a feeling that some characters perhaps got... more, I don't know, like the main character's house they end up in was a bit sort of Samuel Holliwell. He had probably the most background to any of anybody, and really wasn't necessarily the most important character.
No, he wasn't really that central to anything. To be fair, he wasn't. I think it's a very difficult. Sort of character to pin down this one, actually.
I mean, he was really there to employ staff.
Yeah.
That was then more.
But what...
Just for everything to revolve around him. But So we actually sort of learnt quite a bit about him without, but none of the others we really did, you know.
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a different take on that kind of character, as you say, because he was just there to, you know, employ people. And obviously Hannah Fry was sort of working for him as his maid. And it wasn't your typical, from that particular period, because this was sort of 17th century, wasn't it? And it wasn't sort of like, you girl, it wasn't anything, no, more wine. It wasn't that kind of employer, was he?
No.
It was sort of quite a benevolent employer, to be honest with you. He was very enlightened for the period, I felt.
Yes.
You know.
Especially as far as Hannah was, he was.
Yeah. But there was nothing untoward going on. There was no sort of like, well, I favour you, girl. Come to my quarters. There was none of that going on, was there? He was just sort of like a very, very nice employer.
Yeah.
You know, so I suppose he didn't sort of, how can I say, play to the stereotype of that, which usually appears in this kind of, or that period, I would say. Yeah. You know, it's always that, you know, lusting after the serving wench, that kind of thing. Mm.
Although he does make the comment about the club thing, doesn't he? And say it's a hotbed of sin and debauchery. I've been trying to join for years.
Oh, it did make me laugh, that line, actually. But actually, I mean, I think the ones that again don't get any backstory, but I think the ones you sort of really sort of latch on to is the Jasper Jeek and Quincy Flowers characters. Now Jasper Jeek is played by Mark Gatiss, Quincy Flowers played by David Walliams, and I think people have forgotten how long ago this is, that David Walliams was originally, he was an actor, he wasn't, you know, known for like Britain's Got Talent or whatever the hell he doesn't do that anymore, and I don't know what he does now actually, but he's an author, I suppose that's what he's really known for now.
It was an actor and a writer, wasn't
it? Yeah. Then he did that double act with Matt Lucas. Mash and Peas they were first, before it was Little Britain. I think that was their original double act name. But to be honest, I really enjoyed those two characters, and they did play to the stereotypes of that particular period, sort of like the dandies, weren't they?
Yeah.
Now, this went through my mind the more it went on listening to these two. Do you think Gatiss was trying to do his own version of Jago and Lightfoot here?
Yeah, to a certain extent.
Because Quincy Flowers was the Henry Gordon Jago of the two, wasn't he? Jasper Jeek was the Henry Lightfoot.
Yeah.
So, and I did like their double act, and also Jasper Jeek and Turlough's double act as well, for that matter. They sort of paired up, didn't they? So I think that's probably the thing that made me enjoy this story the most, actually. This is what the enjoyment I got from this was those two characters.
Yeah. No, I mean, I enjoyed it. I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it. It had some nice twists.
Mm.
And I felt slightly Turlough out of character in wanting to go on and go into the house and follow and go into the house without the doctor seemed a bit.
Yeah, is this supposed to be set just before Planet of Fire in the continuity? We love a bit of continuity in Doctor Who, don't we? Is this where this is supposed to be set? I remember reading that somewhere.
I'd suspect it would have to be, because otherwise you've got other companions at all times, haven't you?
Yeah. I know they do drop ins to Big Finish, this thing of dropping in stories, so you've got like in the TV version you've got this like one story gap between someone else joins the TARDIS crew, but they seem to drop loads of stories in between, don't they, that happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. But in terms of if you was trying to fit this into the TV continuity, that'd be the only place where it would
fall.
Just have the Doctor and Turlough.
Yeah. Because Turlough's character's sort of changed by this point, because he wasn't like so much the cowardly Turlough that when you had the whole thing with the Black Guardian.
Yeah.
I think he did sort of, the character had sort of changed. And I think that this was that particular Turlough, which, but as you say, yeah, I think you just remember the cowardly Turlough most, don't you, to be honest. I think that's what we tend to associate the character with, being sort of a bit sort of, you know, cowardly and a bit sort of two-faced.
But
really,
we had the scene in the coffee shop where he's basically saying that, you know, A, he doesn't really remember where to go to, and B, doesn't really want to do anything without the doctor.
Yeah.
And then I can understand even following Valentine, but you'd have thought he'd then find where he was and then go back to get the doctor then, or whatever, what they thought they was going to achieve in going into the house there was never quite.
No, I think he was sort of, I wouldn't say coerced, but cajoled a bit more by Mark Gatiss's character. Because he was always sort of disappointed when they said, well, that's enough one evening. And he was sort of like, he got the, you know, the thrill of the chase. He was beginning to enjoy himself. And I think Turlough was sort of carried along with his Jasper Jeek's enthusiasm a little bit.
Yeah. But then the description, I mean, what was really quite effective, I think, was the description of the inside of the house when they got in.
Yeah, because this is sort of this thing that Valentine had been constructing, as you find out later on. We are spoiling it now for everybody. He was he's an alien, isn't he? He was the, was it Karthok of the Daedalus or something, or so, what is it called, or
something like that?
Yeah, yeah, something like that. So he's been building this sort of ship, and it's like biomechanical. And they kept saying when the inside, it was like walking inside liver. The whole walls and the floors are made of liver, and it was quite a once they sort of said that, you get that picture in your mind's eye, don't you? And it's like, it's quite disgusting, actually.
And they're talking about rotting flesh and the smell of rotting flesh and whatever. So, yeah, again, I just think that Turlough at that stage would have gone and got the doctor rather than carried on.
Yeah, a bit repulsed by it more than anything else, and gone. But I quite enjoyed it, actually. But obviously it starts off and you know, the thing that, I don't know if you call it, it's like a, I don't know if the term Chekhov's gun applies to this really, with the 1928 edition of Wisden's Cricketer's Almanac.
Yeah, really. Actually, what was quite interesting is between listening to part one and part two.
Yeah.
My 2024 Wisden arrived.
Ah, right, okay. Yeah, for those of you who don't know, folks, Paul is a massive collector of Wisdens. So, so I was getting to wonder whether this would actually sort of, this would play into your love of cricket as well. Because the opening episode is all about explaining the rules of cricket, really, to Turlough.
Okay,
I must admit, so much did go over my head, I've got to be honest.
No, I understood that, that's fine. I haven't got any 1920s Wisdens. That's disappointing.
What's the oldest you've got?
I was quite jealous.
I was going to say, what's the oldest you've gone back to with your Wisdens collection?
I've got from 1948 to date.
Oh, blimey. Crikey.
But, yeah, I haven't got any pre-war stuff.
Pre-Second World War.
Or pre-Great War stuff, even.
So you're looking out for your
go back that far.
Pre-Charge of the Light Brigade edition, aren't you?
Yes.
Oh dear, oh dear. No, that, I must admit, see, some of the sort of the cricketing terminology that was quite in depth, to be honest. But again, it fits the Doctor's character, this particular iteration of the Doctor, which wasn't really lent on at all, really, was it? A lot on television. So
I think Black Orchid's really the only.
Yeah, that's the only time it really has. That, yeah, so I was quite quite surprised.
Four to Doomsday on the fact that he's got the cricket ball.
Yeah,
yeah, but
you know, beyond that though, that was it, wasn't it?
Hmm.
So I was quite I was also quite surprised to see this play such a big part of the. Well, it didn't really sort of, the cricket aspect didn't play a big part of the story, but the Wisden's
did,
no, but
did, the actual book did.
Yes.
Did, the actual Wisden did, didn't
yeah.
it?
Well, I suppose you just...
Which actually, because it started off, you just think that's actually just a throwaway bit to, you know, light-hearted chat in the TARDIS beforehand.
Yeah, that's what I mean about it being, maybe it's a, you could apply the Chekhov's gun saying to this one, because it was sort of mentioned at the beginning and never mentioned again right until the very end, really, when it became an important sort of plot point, really, yeah. didn't it? So, but obviously you've got things like, I mean, there's other things that the sort of things we like, sort of like things like the Diablo Club, which is sort of like the Hellfire Club, that kind of yeah. thing, sort of like gentlemen's rooms and card games, and obviously the cards play an important part of this story as well. Sort of that, and again, the gentlemen's rooms plays a very big part in this. So I enjoyed all that, and I love all that stuff. Actually, it's such a it's such an alien concept to me, these gentlemen's rooms and all that, so, you know, no women allowed and that kind of thing, and I suppose it fits the period, doesn't it, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
but I just find it fascinating, you know, what do these people do in these clubs apart from gamble? Was that it? Is that all it was, just gambling? I suppose when you listen to this, that yes, that's all it was, just gambling, apart from the other club that Samuel Hollywood was trying to get into. But yeah, it was. I don't know. What do you think of this? I mean, did you like this sort of that sort of world? Sort of, do you find it sort of interesting, or just really strange and funny? Really?
No, I mean, I think it was actually well set. I can't make up my mind on whether I liked all the accents, where they. That, I mean, obviously he's trying to get to that stage, and I'm not sure whether that sort of distracted me as much as anything as well. The different people, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
I was trying to work out who was who.
I know, because
when people was putting on the accents, they was all starting to sound a bit the same.
Yeah, there wasn't. I mean, David Wellems was basically doing his usual camp voice, wasn't he, for Quincy Flowers? Didn't he also play the character of Ned Cotton as well?
He might have done.
The you know, the Night Watchman. I could swear it sounded like him anyway. It did sound like his voice. But he again, he's got one of those voices. It's very, very difficult to disguise.
Yeah,
because he always sounds like David Walliams. That's the that's the thing. But to be honest though, when I sort of because I didn't look at the cast list before I listened to it, and I just thought, I could tell that's David Walliams, and I was a little bit, oh god, have I got to listen to him all the way through? But I actually quite enjoyed his performance, to be honest. It didn't grate on me as I thought it would do.
I mean, I didn't necessarily. I hadn't looked at the cast list at all.
No.
So I wasn't particularly thinking, oh, is this that? Who's that? Whose performance is that, or whatever? So.
No, exactly. I mean, I'm,
no.
I'm,
so from that point of view, I wasn't that bothered. I was struggling to follow sometimes which one was which in some of them, but that's just me, I suppose. I don't know.
No, I didn't actually. I personally didn't get confused by the voices. I just think that the people behind the voices were so recognisable. It was difficult not to, you know, not to say, oh, that's David Wellens trying to do a different voice or something, you know. Same with Mark Gatiss as well. He's got a very distinctive voice, so it's very difficult for him to hide it. But again, I enjoyed his performance, and it's very much he did seem to give himself the plum part, didn't he?
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it nevertheless. You know, I did think it was very good. What do you think of the Valentine character played by, was it David Ryle? Again, he's another one of those. I mean, do you know who David Ryle is?
No,
he's been in so many things. If you look at, if you Google David Ryle and then look at his photo, you know exactly that you think, oh God, yeah, I've seen him in, and he's been in so many things.
Yeah.
But I think one thing I remember him most, he was in episodes of Inspector Morse.
Yeah.
And he played an advanced driving instructor who, I'm giving this a spoiler for everybody who hasn't seen that, he was the murderer in that. And I think Morse tried to, he took like an advanced driving lesson with him in, you know, in the car, and then basically confronted him. And he was quite a sinister character he played in that. So I always remember him from that. But I'd say he's been in so many other sort of TVs, and I think he's in Harry Potter films and stuff like that. It's just one of those character actors, which you could probably imagine that that's why Mark Gatiss, and I think I think it was Nicholas Briggs who directed this one, sort of cast him, really, because he's just one of those people who just sort of can play anything.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. There were certain points I thought he was sort of like being a little bit moustache twirling, I felt.
I suspect that's what they wanted him to be. Yeah.
Because it just sort of suited the period.
I can imagine Mark Gatiss is thinking that his villain from this sort of period would be.
Exactly. But now we haven't spoken about Peter Davison or Mark Strickson yet, really, have we? I enjoyed Turlough in this because he was sort of like, you know, in the thick of the action and everything, and I just enjoyed his performance. Actually, I thought he was actually rather good, considering this was sort of like the first thing he'd done as Turlough, I think, since the television.
Yeah, I mean, he did. Yeah, sound very into that.
Yeah, so I thought he picked up again, you know, from all those years previously. I thought he did rather well, actually. I thought he was really good. And I quite liked, because Peter Davison, as the Doctor, his Doctor was always a little bit, I think we said this before when we reviewed sort of other sort of Fifth Doctor, where it's been Big Finish or the television, is the fact that he always seemed to be quite a passive role in all the stories. Things tend to happen to him rather than he sort of drive anything. I kind of felt this is kind of the same again, right until the very end, when he sort of decided what he could do with, you know, with the playing card and all that.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing, that he actually did go, he worked out quite quick, you know, actively went to force the Valentine's hand, didn't he?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it was a sort of calculated risk on his part, wasn't it?
Yeah, to actually get to the bottom of it.
Hmm. But again, I liked him all the way through it, because I thought he was good, because he was more with the Holywell character, and also Hannah Fry as well. He was more, you know, in cahoots with them throughout the story, because him and Turlough were split up quite early on, weren't they? Which I enjoyed, actually. But I did like the Doctor's interactions with Holywell. I thought they made a good double act. And also the way the Doctor interacted with Hannah Fry as well, particularly when he just thought she was just the, you know, she was just Holywell's servant girl. He was sort of trying to encourage her to get out and take part and sort of, you know, stuff like that, rather than just being stuck in the house all the time. So I quite like that. Actually, that's a very Fifth Doctor thing to do. Well, actually, it's just a very Doctory thing to do, not just a Fifth Doctor.
Yeah,
if I'm being honest.
And then he worked out who she was.
Mm. Yeah, and there was
before it was revealed to him.
Yeah, exactly.
So to speak.
Yeah, and there was no, he wasn't trying to sort of like stop her from, really trying to stop what she was trying to do, was he? I think he was more, he wanted to stop Valentine for what he was doing as well. I think it was just the, again, I don't want to go into too spoiler heavy here, but at the very end, there's nothing he could really do to change the outcome, was there?
No.
You know, so it was, so I suppose he became a little bit ineffectual at the end, didn't he? As to say, he couldn't change anything. But I suppose, again, that's that's very sort of Fifth Doctor. Just sort of it's in character really for that particular incarnation, just to get sort of swept along with events, kind of thing.
And to a certain extent, it's a difficult one to. I can understand it's a difficult ending to have for the Doctor, because at what point, what are you going to do if with Valentine?
Because
you can't expect the Doctor to kill him.
No.
But where do you go otherwise? You know? So to actually have another character there to do the dirty work.
Yeah. I see what you mean.
It's a position where you can see the Doctor isn't going to be able to be in control of the situation, because if he's in control of the situation, what is the answer?
Mm.
What is his answer, you know?
Yeah, that's you're right. It's absolutely right. It's the only way it's gonna go. And I think, you know, I think
Gates it's only probably the first Doctor or the third Doctor that could actually, you would feel, would be happy making a decision on somebody being killed.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, none of the other Doctors would actually do that, would they?
No.
You know, so no. I think you know, Mark Gatiss put together a rather good script, actually, and considering it was such an early story in the Big Finish sort of canon, I suppose you could call it. Prior to this was Sirens of Time, which was a multi-Doctor story, and I think, have you ever listened to that one?
Yeah.
Well, I think it was a little bit, this is what happens when you let Doctor Who fans loose writing a Doctor Who script. You know, it's got to be overly complicated, it's got to feature all the Doctors, and this was more Doctor Who, this one.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, and because it echoed things like, to me anyway, it echoed sort of Jago and Lightfoot. You had that sort of like the, and that's the period that Mark Gatiss enjoyed. It was that Robert Holmes period of Doctor Who, the double X he used to put into his scripts. And I think he's definitely trying to echo that with this one. I think it was sort of, and it also, not only that, I think it was also trying to echo The Visitation as well, the other Fifth Doctor story. This, you know, in that particular period where you had the I can remember the Highwayman character in that. What was he called? Do you know the one I mean?
Yeah,
yeah. I've got a complete blank on that one now, but. Please tell us, listeners, if you know, when I've listened to this, what I could just Google it afterwards, but I can't be bothered.
As played by Olive's husband from On the Buses.
From On the Buses, exactly, yeah. And his name I've forgotten as well, actually. I remember his character on the buses, Arthur. Arthur! Yeah. But, so I think he was definitely sort of like echoing that type of character in this as well. But I just, and that particular sort of period, so I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good to coin a phrase, Paul. I thought it was a good old fashioned romp.
I think it worked from that end, and I did enjoy it.
Yeah. But... Yeah. No, I thought it was very good. And it was nice to listen to a four part story for Big Finish as well, because the ones we've been listening to lately have been sort of like. Over very, very quickly, and maybe a bit rushed, but I thought this was like a good old fashioned audio story to get your teeth
that
into.
That was sort of part of my thing with the fact of why it didn't, you know, you didn't quite get much background on characters, because I thought, oh, if you've got four episodes effectively, it would have done, but. That's my only complaint of it, was I just would have liked a bit more.
Well, to be honest, if this had been on the television, this would have got a Target book novelisation, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And I suppose, really, if you think about it, this was no different to what you got on the TV at the time, or of that period. So you didn't get a lot of background to the characters. That was saved, if possible, for, and if the author was in the right frame of mind, if he had the time to do it, was support that backstory into the Target book.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to me, this was like a, I don't know, it's like someone had saved the audio from a missing Doctor Who story.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? As if someone recorded it off the telly for prosperity's sake, have ended up releasing it as an audio book. So that's how I sort of envisage this one, to be honest. And I just really enjoyed it. I was quite, as I said, to begin with, I wasn't quite sure where this was going. But as it went on, I got into the story and the characters and their interactions quite a bit more than I expected to. So this one gets a thumbs up from me.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's worth listening to.
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh yeah, definitely say. I mean, this one's been around since October 1999. So I'm dare saying a lot of people listening to this have already listened to this particular story. But but if you haven't, if you're one of the few out there who hasn't actually listened to it, I think we're both saying yes, go and listen to it, because I think you might be pleasantly surprised.
Hmm.
I thought it was really enjoyable. So okay, anything else to add, Paul?
No, only that it's Michael Robbins played Richard Mace.
That's it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Just to save anybody listening to this podcast going to have to look it up.
Oh, dear. The thing is, I could see his face, and yes. I could not think of the actor's name or the character he played. So thank you, Paul. You put me out of my misery there, but
or the name of the wig he was wearing.
Oh God! So okay, yes, yeah, so I think that just about wraps it up then, doesn't it? Really. So I suppose when we're next back, Paul, we'll be talking about new Doctor Who, won't we?
We will.
Yes. So we'll be back talking about Space Babies, terrible title, and The Devil's Called. Which is an interesting title, but probably the episode I'm least looking forward to because it's the musical one. So over the last couple of episodes where Scott's been with me, I keep mentioning the fact that I don't like musicals. So I'm just not looking forward to that one at all. So, but I suppose it makes sense being on Eurovision night as well. So it's it all makes sense. It all makes sense, I suppose. But we'll see. Let's see if Doctor Who can change my mind about musicals. I doubt it, but let's see.
Songs for weeks.
We'll see. We'll see. So anyway, so Paul and I will be back talking about new Doctor Who in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah.
Scott and I might be back in between. We'll see what we can come. We might keep talking about our because we've been watching the. If those of you who haven't listened to the previous couple of episodes, we've been looking at how Doctors have been introduced just in their very first episode of their first story and how much of an impact they make. So so we've done the first and second Doctors, so we might do the third Doctor. We'll see how we go with that and see what Scott's taken. Because we've already done the third Doctor's opening story as a commentary many years ago, haven't we? Spirit from Space.
Yeah
that was... I remember enjoying it very much, and enjoying doing the commentary as well. It was as usual quite a good laugh and a few beers. So
yes,
yeah. So so we Scott and I might be back with that next week. But so watch this space. So
right. So
until then, it's goodbye from me, Phil,
and goodbye from me, Paul.
Goodbye. Thanks for listening. You can download this podcast from iTunes, Amazon Podcasts, Spotify, and through your podcatcher of choice. If you would care to leave us some feedback on iTunes, that would be very much appreciated. You can also find us on Twitter at @whose_he_podcast, on the Who's He Podcast Facebook group, and through our website, whose-he-podcast.co.uk.